President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff. On BBS Radio, I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for at least the next hour. Got a great show for you tonight, got a great guest, and I'm going to segue right into introducing him with just a short little item for many people around the country that are unaware of this. There was an earthquake that occurred this afternoon. In fact, I was on the telephone with someone in the Los Angeles area, and so I got to get a report firsthand of the event. And the remark that was made to me was that it wasn't exactly natural, didn't feel natural, and that's quite possible. You know, we've had quakes throughout the years. I can remember back when I was in California, and the quake that did all the devastation in the San Francisco and Oakland area hit, and that was a pretty strong one. I think it was 7.1 or 7.2, something like that. Had a professional baseball game going on in San Francisco. The Nimitz Freeway collapsed. The upper deck of the Nimitz Freeway, which is off of, it's Route 5 North, heading on the west side of Oakland and on the east side of the San Francisco Bay Bridge. And about a mile of that road collapsed, killing some people. Miraculously, a few people survived. And what's been talked about in regard to that particular earthquake is that it didn't seem natural, and that many people in the scientific community thought that there were some games being played, maybe with Tesla's earthquake machine or from outer space. And that seems to be the run-of-the-mill modus operandi, if you want to call that, for the tsunami that we had a few years ago, as well as the recent quake in China. Are they practicing on our people? Well, we're going to talk about that tonight with our special guest. He's an investigative journalist par excellence. He is also a webmaster of one of the most popular research sites in the world, educate-yourself.org. He is also a metaphysical scientist and an inventor and a tinkerer of sorts, we could say. And he's also a good friend. His name is Ken Adachi, and we welcome him to Evident Footprints. Good evening, Ken.
Hi, good evening, Don. Thank you for your generous introduction, as always.
Well, you got to hear me talk about the earthquake. I'm sure you felt it today, and I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah. I was at the computer. In fact, I was working on a response to an email. It occurred at 11:40, 40:41 a.m. Today, July 29th, and we felt it in Southern California. I'm in the Orange County area, which is about 50 minutes south of Los Angeles. And there was a earthquake. It was centered around Cheadle Hills, which is about 20 minutes south of southeast, I should say, of L.A. And initially they said it was a 5.8. They later said it was a 5.4 quake, but it was definitely a strong shaker. I've gone through a few mild rolling earthquakes here in California since we moved here. We came here in 1994. But this is probably the strongest one I've felt. It was definitely a it began by a shuddering, and then there was quite a heavy bang or jolt, which was really surprising. And the shuddering continued for a few seconds beyond that, and then it gradually tapered off. I don't know, the total length of the shaking may have been perhaps 6, 7, 8, 10 seconds. I'm not sure. But I was surprised by the severity of that that hard jolt. I hadn't felt that here in the past. It's the ones that I felt in the past, mild ones, were you tend to feel like a shock wave is rolling along the ground. You get a feeling of a ripple effect. But this was a fairly strong jolt. Now, it caused no damage to speak of here where we are. A few people ran outside of their homes, but most people didn't seem to get too excited about it. And I didn't lose electricity or phone service or any of that. So there was no downsides to it as far as our convenience of living here. However, I did hear in the Chino area, though, about 5,000 people lost electricity for a time, for an hour or two, and then they were able to restore most of them. And I don't think there was serious building damage anywhere in California, including Chino. Now, the reason I was talking to you about it a bit before the show is that I'm suspicious. I'm suspicious about this earthquake, and I'm more than slightly suspicious about the Sichuan earthquake of a month and a half or so ago. I don't for a minute believe the China earthquake was a natural event. I think it was a Tesla technology scalar wave event which can precipitate earthquakes. Now, the Russians were probably the first to develop Tesla earthquake technology in the 60s. Somewhere around, I'm guessing at the dates here, but somewhere around 65 or 66, Brezhnev, who was in charge of the Soviet Union at the time, had made a public statement about he wanted to not have a escalation of threats between the United States and the Soviet Union, similar to what we had experienced with the nuclear arms build-up. And he said that they had developed this technology, a devastating technology. He didn't get very specific, but he says it's more devastating than anything that has been developed to date by man. And that he was willing to share the technology with the United States if the United States would agree to a mutual non-development treaty. In other words, he would say, we're willing to show you exactly what we developed and have here if you'll agree not to develop it into a weapons formatting. We will also agree in a treaty to not develop it as a weapon. Now, the United States, publicly at least, first scoffed at the notion. They did not publicly respond to it seriously. And second, they did not agree to enter into any sort of treaty or negotiation with the Soviet Union about it. They just simply refused to even discuss it. Now, in 1968, I believe, there was a major earthquake in China. It seems to me, I think it was the northern part of China, maybe somewhere in the border region between Mongolia and Russia. I seem to remember it somewhere up in that area. About 500,000 people died. It was the biggest earthquake, I think, in modern history in terms of the number of deaths. It was a severe earthquake. I forget the number, but it was close to 8, I believe, maybe 7.8, 8, 8.4. I can't remember it exactly, but it was a bad news earthquake, and about 500,000 Chinese people died. Now, in listening to a radio show with Tom Bearden, which he did around 1986. There used to be a radio talk show on ABC Radio, which was called The Open Mind. And the host of that show had a lot of interesting people on, kind of alternative science type guest, if you will. And I remember hearing a tape of that show from 1986 in which Bearden was explaining that the Russians were the first one to develop this Tesla earthquake technology, and that he was convinced that the 1968 quake in China was not a natural event, that at the time, Russia and Red China were, you know, hotly embroiled in border clashes with each other, particularly along, you know, the southern border of Russia and the northern border of Mongolia there. And I think what the Russians did, and what Bearden said on the show, is that they wanted to send them a message that we have this technology, we can, you know, apply it anywhere and any time we wish, and back off on the border disputes, you know, because I think what happens is that China was attempting to impinge on the Soviet Union's legitimate area, claiming it was theirs, blah, blah, blah. That's the first I heard of it. And I pay attention when Tom Bearden talks. I subsequently spent more time reading some books that talked about Tesla's development of what some people had called the earthquake machine. There was a guy named Dale Pond who did a very good book on it. And I started to understand the science a little bit more clearly. And since 1968, I think we've had a number of occasions in which other nations beyond the Soviet Union, beyond Russia, have acquired the technology. The United States has the technology. Japan probably has the technology. Probably the more developed countries of, G8, let's say, have the technology. Now, I'll tell you an interesting story. We moved here to California in early February of 1994. Now, 2 weeks earlier, 2 weeks prior to our arriving here, on January 17th, there was a fairly heavy earthquake. I think it was called the Landers earthquake.
I remember that.
Yeah, unless I'm confusing it with Northridge. It's either Northridge or Landers. I can't remember where the epicenter was. But it was a serious earthquake. A lot of highways collapsed, for instance. You know, the elevated highway sections had collapsed. And a lot of buildings were damaged. And when I arrived here in the Costa Mesa area, the people who lived in the complex that I moved into, you became neighbors, they were telling me all about what they were experiencing. He says, wow, that was really something, and how they were anxious to get out of the building because the building was shaking. They were worried it might collapse and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that was kind of a lucky deal for us because we just missed that one. Now, 1 year later to the day, January 17th, 1995, there's a huge earthquake in Kobe, Japan. Now, I hear a talk by Stuart Swerdlow, I think it was in 2000 or 2001. He's talking about these two earthquakes. Now, here's a guy who was a former Montauk boy, victim of mind control, has a lot of inside knowledge on the Illuminati, the manipulators, and a lot of advanced stuff that most of us don't hear about. And he mentioned in that talk is that President Bush Sr., Bush 41, had gone to Japan in I think it was August of 1990, if I got the dates correct, there was a state dinner. Bush got very ill at that dinner. He actually threw up.
I remember that. Yeah, that was a big
to-do. You know the story. He threw up probably, I believe it was on the prime minister. Now, this is what Swerdlow says, what really went on. Bush threw up because he was poisoned. Now, the Japanese were particularly angry at Bush because he's an Illuminati. He heads a crime family, and he has a faction of the Illuminati that has not been friendly or fair to the Asian, particularly the Japanese Illuminati, and they were angry about him. They were angry with him over a number of things, so they were going to put it to him at this dinner to embarrass him. So he was poisoned.
Not enough to kill him, just to get him.
Not enough
to
kill him, but enough to cause him to spontaneously throw up on the prime minister and essentially, you know, look foolish. Cameras, you know, photographers there, the whole nine yards. According to Swerdlow, that the Japanese wanted to send a stronger message to Bush and team by sending earthquake technology. The goal was to cause a massive earthquake in Orange County. Now, Orange County, according to Swerdlow and according to others, this is what David Icke says, this is what Brian Desborough says, Orange County, California is the seat of the Illuminati in America. In other words, there's 13 families to the Illuminati. They have a council. It's called the Council of 13. But here in Orange County is their main, headquarters or meeting area. So when they have...
I would say like Laguna Niguel and La Jolla and that general.
Yeah, and even Costa Mesa. Costa Mesa, according to Swerdlow, is the major satanic ritual capital for the Illuminati in Southern California. There's a lot of satanic rituals taking place in Costa Mesa, according to him. So he says that the Japanese Illuminati really had targeted Orange County. That was their plan. They wanted to cause a massive earthquake in the seat or heart of the Illuminati Council of America. But their directionality was somewhat off, and the earthquake epicenter was more north than what they had originally planned. But it did cause, quite a shake here in Orange County, but not nearly the devastation that they had closer to L.A. Now, again, according to Swerdlow, the Illuminati here in America wanted to play tit for tat. And they make it clear to the Japanese that this is payback by sending their earthquake signal. Now, it could have been a signal, it could have been an underwater naval operation. I'm not completely sure. But I have no doubt that the Kobe earthquake of January 17, 1995 was an intentional act precipitated by the U.S. government. Now, whether they did it through the Earth Tesla scalar waves, or whether there was a naval, Kobe is a seacoast city, a naval event in which they set nukes, underwater nukes to go off to cause, I'm not sure. But I am sure that it was not a natural event and that the United States was behind it. And they chose that day, January 17, 1995, to make it abundantly clear to the Japanese that we can play the same game that you're playing with us. We know it was you, and this is what happens to you if you mess with us. It was so typical of Illuminati factions because they war among each other to be, to gain top position in the pyramid show, shall we say. But none of this ever surfaces into the public's consciousness. We're just being fed the pablum over mainstream, you know, that, oh, gee, had this terrible earthquake in Kobe and blah, blah, blah.
Well, they have the same problem going on right now, Ken, in regard to the world markets, not just oil, you know, the banking scandals that are going on are really affecting people around the rest of the world, because we're not in compliance with Basel II. All these other countries have moved to the gold standard again, and they claim, now, you know, you have to take this with a teaspoon full of aspartame, they're feigning that all these countries are being paid their participation in the so-called Wantagate payouts, which I think are gold payouts. I think they swindled a bunch of gold, and they're paying all the countries that participated in this. It wasn't about the destabilization of the Russian ruble. In fact, and it seems like I'm digressing here, but this has everything to do with the finances right now.
Ooh.
Reagan, in according to Leo Wanta, in Presidential Order or Executive Order 12333, Wanta claimed that executive order gave foreign agents, or let's say CIA, Treasury agents, anyone working overseas, the authority to set up offshore bank accounts. There's nothing in 12333 that says that. Now, they authorize them to conduct business, but they're not talking about setting up offshore bank accounts, destabilizing any foreign government's currency, none of that stuff.
Okay.
So that was made up. Now, you have to ask yourself the question now, if that's the case, and I think Wanta lied about a lot of what he did and where he was. I don't think he was in prison. I've heard from a couple of sources that he's been seen in around the world during the time he was supposedly in prison in Oklahoma, being tortured and made to stand nude out in the snow and what have you.
Right.
Why would they pay these countries all this money? Was it just for the laundering that was going on, where they're shifting these trillions of dollars from one account in a split second to another account, say in North Korea or Vietnam or India or wherever they were, you know, trying to hide the money at any given moment? And you're talking about a few countries. Why all the countries? And I really strongly suspect it has something to do with gold. Now, you know, there is no honor among thieves, so the payouts either are occurring or they're slow or they're not occurring, and they're, like you said, they're jockeying for position. There's no honor among thieves, so you can suspect that they'll make a move and try to assert some sort of a warning that can be disguised as a natural catastrophe, when they full well know that they're all using the same technology. So I agree with you, and I agree with Tom Bearden and Stuart Swerdlow.
Yep.
And I've never been involved in Montauk. You don't have to be to see what's going on.
Right.
So go ahead. I just thought I'd insert
that. Yeah, good. So the earthquake technology has been developed a long time. And a lot of countries apparently have it. Now, I don't know whether France has it or Germany or Israel, etc. But I do know Russia, the United States, and at least Japan have it, because there's too much evidence of its use. All catastrophic, what we used to refer to as, natural events, such as hurricanes, tornadoes, and earthquakes, are now artificially produced. So the number of tornadoes that we had in the United States in the year 2008 exceeded a volume that, you know, was beyond any historical record to date. I remember hearing on the news, probably, seems to me it was late June, so here we only were 6 months into the year, And at that time, they had reported that there was already over 900 tornadoes in the United States so far in 2008. Well, that's never happened in history before. We've never had so many tornadoes. And more than that, the tornadoes that we have had, Oklahoma, I forget, Tennessee, some major, amount of damage and deaths that occur. There's 50 or 60 people, I think it was Oklahoma, if I remember right. When we have a natural tornado, first, they only occur when weather conditions are just right. You need certain elements for the formation of a tornado to take place. They're the air mass, the temperature, the jet stream, the winds, the time of the year, the temperature. There's a lot of elements that need to be in place and correct for a tornado to develop. However, we're having these inexplicable tornado-like windstorms that are causing unexpected damage to towns and cities, and there wasn't even a weather system associated with it. This is the clearest indication that these tornadoes are being artificially created using HARP, I suppose. There are a number of satellites that can beam laser energy, particle beam energy, and somehow the ground system of microwave networks, particularly what is known as the GWEN networks, the ELF networks, the extra low frequency networks, somehow work in tandem with HARP to create a desired weather effect. Now, I'm convinced they're using this also to artificially stimulate drought. There's been a drought going on for about 5 years now in Australia. I believe that these microwave and HARP and chemtrails, because chemtrails also will cause drought to be prolonged, they're working in tandem with each other to create extended droughts in those areas in which they want to create drought, and Australia is one of those areas. Now, I think there were regions of the United States in previous years that they wanted to have extended droughts in, and for a while they were successful. But frankly, I think starting with 2002 forward, because of the advent of the, let's call it the Oregon movement, or the Oregonite movement, and the advent of the Chembuster, thanks to Don Croft, that I think we sort of upset their apple cart here for these prolonged drought regions. That I remember at the time, this is going back to 2002 or so, that they were news reports of the reservoirs in New York State were dangerously low. I know Texas had a serious series of droughts. Florida was experiencing droughts. Some of the southern states, I can't remember the names, but there was large regions around the United States that there was this doom and gloom talk of droughts, crop failure, blah, blah, blah. I think because of the proliferation and expansion and dispersion of chembusters around the country, that we upset the apple cart in that. I believe we bought rain where rain was needed. I'm convinced that chembusters act as a beacon to attract sylphs. And when sylphs come into your area, they help fix the problems in your area. Now, the biggest problem the sylphs have been attending to since they started spraying chemtrails was to neutralize chemtrails. I refer to it as chemtrail transmutation or transformation, because they can literally kind of, what shall I say, gobble up these chemtrails and spit out a residue that is detoxified so that the remainder of what used to be a toxic chemtrail mix is now gathering into what I call transmuted cloud banks. They have a very unique molted appearance to them. They do not look like a conventional cloud formation. They're rather unique. I call them transmuted clouds. And at least for 6 years now or so, the SILS have been doing an increasingly effective job of neutralizing chemtrails and detoxifying them. And I get plenty of emails from people, photographs, etc., in which they say, I can't believe it. We were plastered with these chemtrails, and the SILS come in, and within a very short amount of time, sometime 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, the sky is blue again. They start seeing natural cloud formations, which are really the transmuted clouds. Now, the last time you and I talked, I forget whether we mentioned it on our last radio interview, but no, we didn't. But let me just bring it up, and you could fill in the details. You told me that you were at a football game a couple weekends ago.
It was a baseball game.
Football hasn't started yet. Okay, excuse me. You can see how much of an aficionado I am of sports. Anyway, you were at a baseball game, and while in the bleachers, you had told me that they were really spraying chemtrails very heavy over that area. They were just plastering the skies above that stadium. And, well, let me let you take it from here. Why don't you recount the story?
Okay. Actually, I did want to say something about the earthquake, but we can come back.
We'll come back.
I do have a question for you. It might be interesting to look at motive for it. But this was around let's say two to three weeks ago, and it was a Saturday afternoon or late afternoon, early evening. And, you know, the sun had gone behind the skyline, but the sky was still fairly lit, and I was looking to the north, above Lake Erie, and I could see, a jet just blowing the fumes out the back, and it wasn't high enough, to be contrails, and not in, somewhat close to 80 degree weather. You don't get contrails at, let's say, 20, 30,000 feet.
Correct.
And this jet was flying in sort of a east-southeast direction, okay? Not direct southeast, but in between east and southeast. And another jet made an X. It was coming from the northeast going west-southwest. Made an X in the sky. Well, there's the mark of Satan right there, okay?
Right.
And then they were just passing. There were more jets that came by. Some were commercial looking. The first two jets that we saw were military, and I was pointing to it, and I said to the person that was there at the game with me, look at this. They're spraying chemtrails right over a live baseball game. Can you believe that? Professional athletes are breathing this crap in, and all the people in the stands. And the people in front of me heard me say this, and the guy turned around and he said, what did you call those? And I said, they're chemtrails. We got into the contrail, chemtrail argument for a moment, and I said, trust me, I know what I'm talking about. You keep your eye on them. They're not going to go away. And they didn't. They started spreading. And the guy says, what's in that? And I told him what's in chemtrails, and now the people beside me and the people behind me are listening, and they said, what can we do about this? Should we leave the ballpark? And I said, no, you don't have to. Let's just call the Sylphs. The guy said, the what? I said, let's call the Sylphs. I said, they're nature spirits. All you have to do is just ask them to come and clean up the sky. It's simple. There's no myth to this. There's no ritual, no dogma involved. Just ask them to come and clean up the sky. I would say there were at least 30 trails all across the area above the ballpark, and extending for miles beyond in every direction by the time they were done. It was almost like they had made spokes on a wheel, and there were some parallel lines, three or four parallel lines that were running straight east and west, and they were intersecting these spokes from the X's that there were drawing in the sky. And within about 15 minutes, we had two complete rows of fans sitting there looking at the chemtrails. I just told them, call the sylphs, and before you know it, these huge clouds became animals. And they were gigantic. And one was a face, also a human face with a beard and a hat and sort of an angry look on his face. And it looked like he was just sucking it in, you know. You could see these clouds had spread in a matter of minutes, and it was kind of windy that day, too. So the trails were really spreading across the sky rapidly. And when the sylphs came, and you could see them, first they would appear at the top of one cloud or at the bottom of another cloud or at the right or the left side of the cloud. And it would move in the opposite direction of where it appeared from and just took out the whole cloud. Within 15 minutes, the sky was blue again.
Wow.
Not a trace of a chemtrail. And the fans started clapping. And these two rows of fans were clapping, but they weren't clapping for the game. It was in between innings now, and the warm-up pitcher's on the mound, and they're playing music, and everybody's looking at us. What are these people clapping about? But I made believers out of these people. They saw it. And then I told them, I said, you know, you need to consider who's behind this and what the implications of this is. Spread it around to everybody. Tell people. And I gave one guy web addresses. I gave him your web address and my web address and Clifford Carnicom, and told him, go on the web. Just Google the word chemtrails. There's a lot of research being done now. So it takes experiences like that to actually get people to recognize that something's going on. We had an emergency down our street last summer, and I talked to the fire department. They were spraying chemtrails right above us as they were putting out a fire on a telephone pole. There was a like one of those big, huge ballasts that they use. They're filled with oil, and they have a light on them. And that thing had caught on fire, started the telephone pole on fire. So they had to come in, shut off the power, and they're at all ends of the street and in between, making sure that all the residents stayed away from the area where they're spraying. So I've got six firemen standing in my driveway, and I said, you know what that is up there? And the guy goes, yeah, that's contrails. They were no more than 10,000 feet above us on that day. And it was a very, very hot day. And I said, contrails in this weather? Are you crazy? And the guy says, what is it? And I told him. And I said, do your homework. It's amazing. The people that work for the cities, the people that work for the government don't know what this is. Somebody that works in a disaster preparedness capacity, in a rescue capacity, doesn't know what a chemtrail is. The ignorance is astounding.
Yep.
But that's the gist of the story. So.
Okay, it's a wonderful story, though, and I'm glad you told it, because the notion that, that sylphs exist and they can vacuum the sky of chemtrails is difficult for a new listener to accept or swallow, but there's a lot of evidence from a lot of people for 6 years now. I mean, I have dozens of letters and pictures on my website about this, but the notion, we started to find out, I think it was around 2004, there was a woman named Kim who sent me an email, and she had made up this little rhyme and poem about sylphs. She had just read about the sylphs on their website, and she was fascinated by it. And She said that she saw chemtrails being sprayed, and she also saw what she thought was the sylphs. So she made up a little rhyme asking the sylphs to come in and clean up the sky, and she was amazed that she could just stand there outside, and she saw the sylphs develop right before her eyes. They take on, it might be an animal form, a marine animal, a land animal. It might be a human, humanoid-looking form. It might be a human-looking face. It might be an animal type of appearance. It might be, you know, some type of animal that we normally don't see. They assume a lot of different shapes, but most of the shapes that I've seen photos are tend to be animal forms that we can recognize. In the summer of 2004, there was a sylph that made its appearance, apparently just for me, because it was the only thing in the sky on that day. It was a June day. And I had gone out to the store and I was writing an article about sylphs that very morning. And this sylph appeared in an otherwise perfectly blue sky, very large sylph. It was the perfect image of a flying Japanese crane. I mean, it's the exact same image that you would see on a painting. And I took photos of it at the time. And I later asked Z.S. Livingston up in British Columbia. I says, "Can you define this more for me? I had the feeling it's some sort of bird structure." And he said, "You know, that's a Japanese flying crane." And the minute he told me that in his email, I recognized it instantly. And I says, "Oh my God, you're right. It's a perfect image of a Japanese flying crane." So we can usually recognize the form. Now, of late, this is a more, what shall I say, it's not necessarily a recent development, but let's say it's a heightened awareness on my part that when I take photographs or videos of sylphs, which now I can, even from the ground, looking up at the sky, I can now recognize the animal forms much more quickly than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within these sylph animal forms, when you take a photograph and you load the digital image into your computer and you enlarge it and you contrast adjust the image, you heighten the contrast, there are multiple etheric images that are easily seen within what we're calling sylphs. And these images could look exactly like a human head, face. It could look like a easy to recognize animal such as a bear, or a raccoon,
a lion,
or a deer, a lion, a tiger, etc. So on July 22, that particular day they decided to spray like all get out in my area here, but there was also a great deal of sylphs that showed up that day to neutralize it. And I started to take photos around noon, and I was taking them through early afternoon and then, you know, mid-afternoon and right into early evening, because there was so much activity that day that I went outside about every 30 minutes or so just to take a bunch of pictures so I could have a record of everything. That was an amazing day. In fact, we haven't had a chemtrail spraying in our area since July 22. The last 7 days have been totally blue skies. We've had some genuine clouds for a few days, but not a chemtrail since July 22. Well, anyway, the etheric images that showed up in those photos on that day, I started to load some of them into an article that I posted. Well, I must have posted around July 24 or 25, I'm not sure, maybe 26. It's on my current news page under the latest articles. But I only have begun to post the photos because I have so many really important and fabulous photos to show with that photo essay. There, in the end, I might have as many as 100 or so photos included, but I have at least maybe a dozen up there now, just to start the explanation of what occurred that day. And in one of those shots, was of a large segment of the sky that was occupied with what I called transmuted clouds. And the transmuted clouds themselves, which is the residue, remember, from what was formerly chemtrails, which had been transmuted by the sylphs, and they spit out this residue, which tends to clump together into cloud banks. And the cloud bank itself, the transmuted cloud bank, took on animal shapes. In near the upper part of the image, there was a shape that looked like a cat. So I called it a tiger because it seemed to me, you told me when you saw it, you thought it was a lion. But, you know, you could call it either one.
Yeah, it looks like a male lion, actually.
Definitely looks like a large cat, right? I mean, we can agree that the eyes, the head shape, and the snout, et cetera.
Yeah.
But what is amazing is that when I cropped some of the individual images that makes up this larger image of a tiger or a lion's head, that itself is composed of what I'm calling etheric images. I don't know how else to describe them. But when I enlarge them, the contrast adjust, they look like images of human beings. They look like images of animals that tend to, instead of just being one individual creature per photo, you tend to have multiple etheric images that are melding or blending into each other. It's rather amazing, this whole phenomena. And this is a remarkable development, but it's somehow tied in with the evil and the nefariousness of the entire chemtrail genocide agenda somehow has permitted or allowed or encouraged sylphs to counter this effort by neutralizing these chemtrails. And somehow in the aftermath of that transmutation, you have this amazing display of what I believe are fourth-dimensional entities, energy. I don't know exactly what this is, but I do know that we don't normally see this in the third dimension, but they are appearing in these transmuted chemtrails. They're appearing within these structures we're calling sylphs. So this is an amazing story. And the fact that we can call up this assistance to clean the sky of chemtrails with our mind by just expressing the intention or the request to assist us, it seems to cause sylphs to come flooding in, and as you saw yourself with your own eyes, within 15 minutes they cleaned the sky. This July 22nd...
I can tell you, Ken... Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you had finished your sentence.
Well, I just finished this last line. Then you can. I can tell you that I too, on July 22, saw how quickly they were spraying heavy and hard. It wasn't a light day, but what I did is, as an experiment, I saw a fresh chemtrail lay down. Maybe it was around 12:35 p.m., 12:40 p.m. Just laid it down, a very tight line, typical chemtrail tight line. And what I did is that I took photos of that line. Now, it was one of these chemtrails lines in which the sprayer's on, they turn it off for a short time, very short time, then they turn it on again. So there was a break between the chemtrail on the right and the same line on my left. So what I did is I photographed both of them separately, and I continued to photograph about at 1 minute intervals to see. I wanted to see it spread out. I wanted to see what happens to it, how long it took to. Well, it seems that within 2 minutes of the chemtrail being sprayed, the transmutation process began. And within all 10 to 12 minutes, they had totally transformed those chemtrails into now what was a sylph There was a sylph on my right, sylph on my left. That was just a tight chemtrail 10 minutes or 12 minutes earlier. Now, what's really amazing is that I was taking video of these, designated chemtrails that I wanted to, you know, photograph minute by minute. I was also taking videos. At maybe the 10 or 15 minute mark, after the transmutation had begun, I adjusted my camera to take video, and I just started to sweep from left to right in the sky so that I can get all this on video, because very often later when I look at my computer, I see things in examining the video that I didn't see with my naked eye. So that's why I kind of try to cover it by taking both video and stills. Well, here's the thing. I didn't notice it at the time, but when I got back and looked at the video on the computer, the chemtrail on the right had developed eyes, if you want to call it. Let's say it looked like a fish. Overall, its general form looked like a fish. It developed eyes in the left and right. As I was panning the camera from left to right, that former chemtrail, now a sylph, on the right side, turned its body and was following my camera with its eyes. You can see on the video the sylph turning in its head following the movement of the camera. It's not an optical illusion. It's the creature is following my panning from left to right. In other words, he's looking at me as I'm, you know, so as the camera goes to the right, he's turning his body. It's just amazing. Now, I haven't put that photo up yet, or I haven't put the video up yet, but eventually I will. That was astounding to me when I saw it on my computer. I says, oh, my God. I ran it back, you know, repeatedly to watch the video over and over again. I says, holy cow, this thing is actually turning its head, following my movement of the camera. It was simply amazing. Now, perhaps we should get back to the earthquake.
Now I want to make a comment about the sills. Just for a moment here.
Yeah.
Okay. In my dictionary, in my computer's dictionary, it calls a sylph an imaginary spirit of the air. Well, I'll tell you that is an absolute falsehood and a lie. That these are sentient beings, they're nature spirits. And when they spray the chemtrails, because they're ethereal beings, they're basically spraying this into the ether, and yes, they're taking offense to it. Yes. So when you call one, you don't have to have any special metaphysical gift. All you have to do is address the issue, and they immediately come in. Yes. I've seen a good 40 people that never had seen the phenomena before call the sylphs. And in 15 minutes, a very huge area was cleared out.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, you know, it's
dimension they're from. They could be second dimensional beings that have been, let's say, chased out of their home in the earth because of the mining that goes on and the oil production and all those things, because they have... they have a place in our reality, even though we don't see them normally. They're real, and they have a place.
Yes. Since you brought that up, let me just remind or tell folks. Z.S. Livingstone, who's a very interesting guy from British Columbia, he has many, many articles posted at my website. He wrote articles going back to 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, they go into great depth about who and what the sylphs are and why they are manifesting now into cloud forms, which we can visibly see. In earlier times, because, you know, the atmosphere wasn't being poisoned the way it is now with chemtrails, they normally were not seen, although occasionally they were seen. I have a photograph that I found in an archive of a scene over the Madrid airport. I think it was in the mid-60s, 65, 66. Huge sylph in the shape of what looks like a wolf, a very convincing wolf. So it's not like sylphs never manifested in earlier times, but I think it was relatively rare. I mentioned on my website that Trevor Constable photographed using infrared film in the late 50s and early 60s what he called, in his book, he's a very prolific writer, but his probably his most important book was called The Cosmic Pulse of Life, originally printed in 74, I believe. In fact, he printed a book back around there, around 58, 59, in which he, the first time he had photos of these creatures, which he called critters. He didn't call them sylphs, but they in fact are sylphs. They were not seen with the naked eye. They were taking these shots in the California desert before the sun came up. Him and another man named Bob Woods were doing this. And they were attracting the sylphs because Trevor Constable had learned from a metaphysician by the name of Franklin Thomas a way of moving your arm in a back and forth oscillating manner that it was called the star exercise. And there was this very knowledgeable metaphysician said, told Trevor that if you do this, you're going to create a swirling or a vortex in the ether. And their original purpose for doing it was to attract UFOs, which they could not see with the naked eye, but did show up in infrared film. So that's what they were really after, UFO shots. Mm-hmm. But what was showing up in many of the shots, not every shot, of course, was these huge amoeboid-looking creatures that only showed up on the infrared. They could not see with the naked eye. They were sylphs. So sylphs are air elementals. They've been here since the dawn of time. Metaphysicians write about sylphs. I have most of the books written by Lobsang Rampa. Mm-hmm. He talks about all the elementals in his books. He mentions the sylphs. He mentions the earth elementals. He mentions the elementals that live and do work in the ocean, the Udines or undines. So elemental beings have always been with us. And of course, the word itself comes from the Greek. Paracelsus, Greek physician, metaphysician, wrote at length about all of the elemental beings. And, you know, the Greeks and Romans had no problem recognizing and understanding that sylphs were sentient beings. As you say, they are not a mythological fantasy, that's only what modern dictionaries might say, but if you read the books of people who are, you know, metaphysically educated, they very much know that elementals are sentient beings, and their job is to act as caretakers. They work in league with Mother Nature, because the Earth itself is a living, sentient being. And
Well, I find it ironic that they would take the time to put the word imaginary in there. It's longest word in the definition, and it's a lie. It's ignorance.
Yes, right.
And it's obvious that there's an attempt there to dumb somebody down.
Exactly. So. You've hit it. That's really the key by using code words like imaginary. It's to send the subconscious, you know, message that, you know, serious people don't take this seriously.
Yes. Okay. So, now, that said, can we go back to the earthquake?
we'll go back to the earthquake. Yeah.
Okay. There's, now, I'm on the USGS website.
Yeah.
U.S. Geological Survey website. They show the earthquake. Now, this is the terminology here. Greater Los Angeles area. Magnitude 5.4 is what they're saying.
Yep.
They're saying it struck Tuesday, July the 29th, which is today, at 18:42:15 UTC.
Yeah, universal.
Now, now, let's look at the areas where, and there's some specifics here. This is important to look at the nature of a quake to see the depth, because the devastating quakes usually take place at very, very deep places in the Earth's crust, you know, 10 miles or more.
Yep.
Okay. It's showing 4 kilometers, or approximately 3 miles, west-southwest, 240 degrees from Chino Hills, California. 7 kilometers, or 4 miles, southeast, 135 degrees from Diamond Bar, California. 8 kilometers, 5 miles, north-northeast, 16 degrees from Yorba Linda, California. So it was moving towards Anaheim.
Yes.
Then 12 kilometers, 7 miles, south, 184 degrees from Pomona, California. Now it's way east there. And then 46 kilometers, or 28 miles, east-southeast, 104 degrees, from Los Angeles Civic Center. So this is, most of this is quite a ways outside of Los Angeles, yet they call it the greater Los Angeles area.
Yep.
Now the depth is really interesting here. The depth of, they're saying a couple of different things here. They say, okay, the horizontal movement was plus or minus 0.3 kilometers, or 0.2 miles, depth plus or minus 0.6 kilometers, or 0.4 miles. So this is very shallow.
Yep.
The likelihood of it being something from above coming down is much greater, if you ask me.
Yes.
That's obvious.
I see where you're going on that, yep.
Okay, now, but there's another section where those are the location uncertainty. They're giving that I just read those figures. Now they say the depth occurred at 13.6 kilometers or 8.5 miles. Still, that's not the devastating type of quake that you would get. At 10 miles, it's more likely to be above 6. Let's say like a 6.5 or a 6.7. And keep in mind, every tenth of a point in an earthquake, let's say from a 5.4 to a 5.5, the earth releases 63 times the amount of energy every tenth of a point on the
Richter scale. Right, it's a logarithmic scale.
Yes.
You're right. It's a tremendous increase in output. Every tenth you go up.
Now, I was interested because you were talking about this issue of Japan and the United States. And on their homepage, this is again the USGS homepage, quake.usgs.gov. Right on the homepage, they list the most recent earthquakes. You have a magnitude 7.7, Sea of Okhotsk, that's near Russia and Japan, north-northeast of Japan, on July the 5th. Okay, on July the 19th, or 2 weeks later, a magnitude 7 off the east coast of Honshu, Japan.
Yep.
Then magnitude 6.6, Santa Cruz Islands region, on July 19th, same day. Magnitude 6.8, eastern Honshu, Japan, July 23rd. So 4 days later, you have almost the same intensity of a quake. Plus or minus 63 times, 2 times.
Yep.
Or 126 times less in intensity. But that's still very close.
Yes.
Then, today's is listed as a 5.4. Now the one earthquake that I mentioned, is affecting an area around Australia, the Solomon Islands, Guadalcanal, Queensland, Australia, around there, Brisbane and Queensland. at least they're in the mileage area, and the 6.6, they would feel that far away. 1,360 miles is not impossible for them to feel that, because they could feel the San Francisco quake all up and down the West Coast years ago. I think it was 89, if I remember correctly. So this is kind of suspicious. It looks very political.
Yeah. So that's what I'm hitting at. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not alone. If you simply do a search on Google in the Sichuan earthquake, plus maybe the word engineered earthquake or deliberate earthquake or some word like that, you're going to see there's a number of articles that have already been posted to the Internet in which they are alluding to the same notion that I'm talking about. It was intentionally triggered earthquake. Now, I've read that there is a secret Chinese military underground structure base in that area, very close to the area, that apparently was destroyed as a result of that quake. Was that the real target? I don't know. But I'm very suspicious that it was, in fact, an engineered event. Now, we've had two, quote, wildfires here in California the last 8 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
Back in October of last year, it was late October, we had one very close. It was, in fact, it included our town here, so, you know, we saw the smoke and the glowing embers in the sky for, you know, a week or so. So we had what the papers was reporting as a series of fires. This is throughout Southern California. California is a long state, and even if you were to start, let's say, 50 miles or so above L.A., if you go from there to San Diego, you're still talking 400 miles, 450 miles long. This is a big, long state. It's a large state. They were having, quote, wildfires, which the press, the TV news, the radio, for the most part, was saying was being caused or triggered by downed power lines. Now, there was a few reports in which they said that arson investigators are looking into report of arsonists. So it's not like they didn't report arson, but their main cover story was it was downed power lines. Now,
down from what? Did you have any storm?
Well, exactly. Well, you're jumping ahead of me, but you've got an area of maybe 400 miles in length, from 50 miles above LA all the way to San Diego, and then a state that's, again, I'm just guessing at the numbers, but maybe 150 to 200 miles wide. You had what amounted to 40 or 50 separate fires in all these locations throughout the whole southern portion of California, and they're telling us on the news that it's due to down power lines. Now, there was some increased winds when these fires broke out. How do they get winds? Very easily, they crank up the HARP equipment, the same equipment that they use to generate wind storms out of a clear blue sky. That's happens on a number of occasions in the last few years. The same equipment they used to generate the 900 plus, well, it's over 1,000 now, but at the time in mid-June it was 900 plus earthquakes. They have the technology to steer the jet stream anywhere they want it, and between satellites, they can beam down laser energy and HARP and the ELF microwave networks, they can create weather systems. So it's not difficult to generate winds. Now, you have a series of fires that were, in fact, started by teams of arsonists throughout Southern California. I think I can reasonably assume that not one of the fires was due to a downed power line. For one thing, I had my tape recorder on continuously from the time that the fires were first reported. Actually, it started in the 2 or 3 or in the morning or so. And then I was I was taping by 5:30 or 6 a.m. in the morning, and I kept the tape recorder running continuously for the next 2 days. I just kept on popping in another tape every 6 hours because I wanted to get all of this, these reports, so I can review it later. And what they said, most of the time reporters were saying down power lines. They never showed us video of a down power line. They never, so we never even got to see pictures of these so-called down power lines. Not one photograph, not one video camera showed us a single down power line, yet they were attributing the bulk of the fire to down power lines. There was no such thing happened. You had teams of arsonists who were starting all these fires within hours of each other. It's simply statistically impossible for 40 or 50 separate fires separated by a distance of 400 long by, let's say, 200 wide to spontaneously all start within 2 or 3 hours of each other on the same day. It just can't happen. Only a lunatic is going to, when you actually analyze what they were telling us happened on the news, it can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So all
now,
the fires...
question for you.
Yeah.
Where is the predominance of, if there is such a thing, the predominance of the foreclosures on homes taking place in the state of California, from what you know? Is it primarily in Los Angeles, or is it spread around pretty evenly all over the place?
Well,
you have to include Ed McMahon's house, too.
Yeah, okay. Okay, this is what I noticed. Of course, I haven't studied it carefully, so this is just a general impression. What they did is there was a lot of development building that had taken place in areas. Orange County is fairly well built up, and there's poor sections of, economically less developed sections of Orange County. A lot of areas of Orange County are, let's say, more upscale. Okay, so the people who can afford to buy into this area, have the income ability to sustain a mortgage. Now, what they did though, because they started this building boom around the mid 90s, so 94, 95, they started to build a lot of houses in the Riverside area. Now, Riverside is about, maybe a 45 or a 1 hour commute from LA, but you can buy a house in a nice looking neighborhood for half the price that it would cost you for an LA suburb. So a lot of people started to buy in Riverside County and going south towards San Diego, more to the east part of the state, because the homes were much cheaper. Now, you had the commute to get there, but they were new homes, they were cheaper. They were trying to sell a lot of homes. So what they were doing, they were making these low-interest, no-down-payment loans to people who, in many cases, didn't really have the income, didn't have the credit profile, didn't have a down payment to support it, but they were making, the loans easily available. That's why you had all these collapses, because when the interest rates changed, they couldn't keep up the payments, so you had a lot of foreclosures. So I would say that there's a predominance of foreclosure in those areas that sold to those folks who really weren't good candidates for mortgages, but they suckered them in with low interest rates, no down payment, and they approved people who didn't have the income, didn't have the credit profile to sustain a mortgage, but they wanted to make commissions on selling mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. And what happens is when the bank goes belly up, like one just did in Pasadena about a week or so ago, the American taxpayer, who is where they get the money for the backing of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, takes up the slack for the malfeasance and greed and negligent management by the banking industry. So that's where I see the foreclosures predominating, in those areas that developed quickly, sold to people who really couldn't sustain it. So if you're looking for a bargain on a house, drive out to Riverside, California. There's a lot of them.
Well, the reason I ask that question is I would almost bet you that if you look at insurance coverage, let's say the people that have fire insurance, how many of these people are going to carry exotic insurance? You know, they may have liability insurance. They're going to have the minimum of what's required on the basis of who's carrying their mortgage. If you look at Hurricane Katrina, there were a lot of houses damaged, a lot of buildings and houses were damaged, some a total loss from just the winds alone and the rain. Yet that's considered an act of God, and these people didn't have flood insurance. And those that heard the explosions that caused the levees to give way and
that
flood
was,
everything out, the insurance companies had an out there that, well, your home was destroyed by the flood.
Yep.
And you're not covered under flood insurance. I'm just wondering, how many people have earthquake insurance? How many people have fire insurance?
About 50% of earthquake insurance, because I just heard it over NPR today. Now, where we're going on this is that the fires back in September of 2007 here in Southern California were intentionally set by arson teams. Now, why? The state, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the first thing they did when these...
You're speaking about the governor of California, right?
Yeah, California. I'll be back.
Okay. All right. We just want to clarify that for people. We're not talking about the Terminator. We're talking about the governor of California.
Yeah, the Austrian-born governor of California, son
that
of
admires
a Nazi
Hitler.
Policeman. Right.
Okay. Husband of Maria Shriver.
Yeah, Maria Shriver, Shriver family, part of the Kennedy Illuminati family clan. And boy, what I can tell you about Maria Shriver. We'll save it for another talk.
Okay.
Anyway, getting back to what is the game here? Okay. They started these fires back in October, and they started the fires that just took place in late June of this year. Now, all these fires took place in Northern California, the series that started. What the news says is that these fires were started by multiple lightning strikes.
Yeah.
However, if you examine the news carefully for the weather, I think the fires started either June 22 or 23. It began on one of those two dates. There was no thunderstorms. Now, you know, I think all of us can agree that lightning usually emerges from within a thunderstorm. However, what they were saying with a straight face, I heard it on TV news as well as radio, they said there was multiple cases of clear air lightning. I might have brought this up in our last talk, but I want to remind...
That's the distant cousin to swamp gas.
Right. There is no such thing as clear air lightning. Lightning is normally a discharge that takes place only when you have, you know, certain cloud formations in place. A cumulonimbus cloud is a very high cloud, and it's charged, and there's a charge in the cloud, the opposite charge in the ground, and when the charge becomes sufficiently high in voltage difference, you get a discharge, and that's what we see as a lightning bolt. But you don't get a discharge out of clear air. Now, how were these fires started? It could have been with Tesla fireball technology, because they can throw what's called a lightning ball into any forested area they wish. But I got an email from a guy named Keith, and he told me that he's studies airport traffic very carefully, and he says he noticed certain military planes that have incendiary weaponry aboard that were flying, a lot of them were flying on the day that, quote, it was June 22, 23. He says, normally I don't see these. He says, I saw eight of them in the same day. I think what they did is they simply started the fires, the military, using conventional incendiary devices, weapons, laser beams. That's easy. You can send out, an incendiary device that will torch a forest. So I don't for a second believe that the event was natural, because there was no natural event that could have caused it. There is no such thing as clear air lightning. It doesn't happen. Yet that's what they're saying happened. That's ridiculous. So, again, you had a situation, the military is intentionally torching these areas. Now, why
now,
are they...
The question is, who's asking them to do that? That's the big question.
Well, I think it's both, there are, let's say, interest on the state level and on the federal level that are both gaining. On the state level, you have these organizations, that are firefighting organizations, emergency preparedness, emergency response teams. What they started to do the minute that the fires broke out in Southern California in October, when Arnold was on the TV, on the scene there, you had the fire marshals talking. They're talking about the need to buy more fire equipment. They got to buy more planes that, you know, that dump the fire retardant. What I think what they did is that they want to not give the state legislature the chance to reject their requests for greater funding for all these quote emergency response projects they want to. So I think a lot of contractors, a lot of people who, you know, make the equipment, make the planes, a lot of people stand to make money if you can come up with a pretext for jacking up, quote, the need for all this emergency equipment. Obviously, if you got to hire a lot more firemen, the supervisors, the pays go up, the bonuses go up, the scale goes up. I mean, a lot of people make money in the emergency response game. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Another part of it is, I think, it allows Arnold and the federal government to, Arnold asks for emergency, you know, status, because this is an emergency zone or whatever they call it. And he gets money from the federal government. But the government always has strings attached to whenever they give money. And certain requirements are attached. So I think it's the way for the federal government, using the excuse of giving the money for the emergency fire, you know, preparation and build up and budgeting and all the emergency things, this industry grows exponentially the more they can feather their nest, as it were. So they create fires to create the pretext to feather their nest. And I think you get these big brother, strings that go along with the federal money. Now there's more going on. Now people are losing houses, and they're losing houses in areas that, let's say, are abutting federal game reserves, and maybe it's not called game reserves. It's the federal national forest, etc. Now I see a trend over the last perhaps 10 years or so, maybe 15 years. The government is trying to force people who live in or near federal reserved areas, forested reserve areas, they're trying to push them out. They're trying to push people towards the cities.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
You see this trend going on in a lot of ways. They're up at Klamath Falls 10 years or so ago, they were having a big brouhaha over the river water. They were trying to force those farmers out of that region. They're trying to push people towards cities, get out of the rural areas, because they're planning on the big New World Order martial law takeover deal. And they don't want people scattered around in rural areas, because that's, you can survive, you can get by, you can grow your own food, you can't be hustled into, cattle cars. They'll take it to some internment camp if they got to hunt for you in forested rural areas, so they want to move us towards the cities.
Well, they got the fires at Yosemite National Park now, too.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard about that.
I didn't hear about
that. They were showing film on that last night.
All right.
So, you know, it's all over the place. They're doing the same thing. It's a cookie-cutter technique is what it is.
Right. So we will see more and more escalation of crisis, weather events, tornadoes, hurricanes. I see they've already got two hurricanes. The hurricane season of 2005, those Katrina, et cetera, Rita, they were all jacked up, created by Harp, and jacked up and steered straight into New Orleans, steered straight into Houston, steered straight into Miami. I think it was Wilma was heading to. These things are being steered by Harp. Now, they had planned to have another bang-up year producing hurricanes the next year in 2006. It did not happen. We had no significant hurricanes. We had a couple of minor ones, nothing. Fizzlers, and same with 2007. And Z.S. Livingstone wrote a very fine article back in 2006, I believe, in which he explains that in order to jack up these hurricanes and direct them, they have to manipulate something that he calls etheric ice. And he has a number of articles on his section of my website that if listeners want to find out more about how they need this etheric ice to steer and develop a hurricane, they should look into those articles from C.S. Livingstone. But what he said is that they had used up so much of this etheric ice, which is located in, you know, the southern Atlantic, where you know, the Mediterranean is there, Caribbean area, that they exhausted the supply, as it were, in 2005, and they didn't have any to speak of for 2006 and 2007, even though they had predicted. I remember well, in March of 2006, we said on the news that this coming summer, 2006, we were going to have a minimum of 13 major hurricanes, at least 7 of which will be on the order of Katrina or greater. I have it on tape. They said this on ABC News. They said this on NBC News. A, you cannot predict a hurricane in advance. You cannot do that. It can't.
Unless you're making it, and unless you're manufacturing it.
Unless you're manufacturing it. Now, when the National Weather Service is told to inform the, you know, their weather people in these various news outlets to say all this, yes, then you can predict it because you're manufacturing it.
Well, so, you know, when we were in school, they would say, you know, the slightest disturbance of air can begin an earthquake. It could be the fluttering of a butterfly's wings on the west coast of Africa can start that. So, you know. So, we need to study butterflies, I think, a little bit more.
Yes.
And we probably get better at predicting the earthquakes. But,
well,
I'm just being ridiculous, you know. Pseudoscience.
Right. Well, anyway, I wasn't sure where we were going to go tonight, but I'm glad we at least broached the subject that the earthquakes that were experienced, particularly in China, were artificially created. I don't know, but I have a suspicion the one that we had here today was artificially created because of the oddness of the reports. Everyone mentioned that there was and I felt it, of course, it was a very powerful jolt. In the past, I usually feel the earthquakes as a rolling event. And undoubtedly, people who have the seismographic equipment that can see the sort of pressure waves or electromagnetic waves that precede a natural earthquake versus an artificial one, the data shows up differently. And that's one way you can detect it. Now, whether, you know, we, the public, will gain access to those charts and graphs or equipment, I don't know. But it's worth searching out to see if you can see something very specific. Because I know when they dropped the World Trade Centers on September 11th of 2001, that the explosions set off seismographs. And because of the nature of the pulse, they could see it was clearly not due to a natural event, that it was an artificially created pulse from an explosion. And the fires and the tornadoes that we're experiencing are not a natural phenomena. They are being created artificially. We have to keep this in mind, because they're using these events as pretexts in order to deny us more and more freedom, and as pretexts to install more and more laws and regulations and rules in which we have to abide by whatever the government tells us to do. And there's just so many instances now in the news in which the government is taking increasing control over our life. They just passed a law. Arnold Schwarzenegger just signed a law in which it's going to be against the law, I guess, in 1 or 2 years, for any restaurants to serve food that includes trans fatty acids, or trans fats. Again, the people who are justifying it on the radio are saying, well, it's the government's job to protect people's health and so forth. They'll always use the protection card when they install these Big Brother controls. But we the people have the right to decide what we want to eat or don't want to eat, and the government has no authority, certainly no constitutional authority or right.
It's almost an oxymoron, that law, because there are very few restaurants these days that even serve food. And the way to get around the law is just serve trans fatty acids. Forget the food. Wow. Well, would you like a scoop of that? Or
right. Yeah, there's a town called Calabasas, California, that's outlawing smoking anywhere. You can't smoke in public. You can't smoke on the street. You can't smoke in your house. You can't smoke in your backyard. You just can't smoke within the city limits. That's an outrage. People have to, recognize that these Big Brother laws are steadily encroaching on our life. You hear something new every day. We have to fight back. We have to, thank God the Supreme Court a few weeks ago reversed the gun ban in, Washington, D.C. They had to remove the ban on possessing handguns. I see that the Chicago Mayor Daley is going to fight it tooth and nail. Him and his legal team decided that the state law, their city law, municipal law, can dictate something different than what the federal what the constitutional requirements are. It's insane what I'm hearing from Daley and his legal eagles up there, but they're saying it with a straight face.
Mm-hmm.
We have to also think about the election that's coming up. I just read an article by Davy Kidd. I'm not crazy about Davy Kidd in all regards, because she has not. I'll save that for another talk. But
yeah, we're running out of time, actually.
Okay.
Ben.
I'll just close it with this, and we'll pick up the conversation on another time.
Well, it's been interesting. We touched on a few topics. These disasters that appear to be, and those of us that sense something's not right, all agree that these are not natural. Although the media is pumping that, calling them acts of God.
Yes.
I don't know how you could call a down power line an act of God, how you could call clear air lightning, an act of God when even God would laugh at the term. And it just reminds me of swamp gas, you know, when yes. J. Allen Hynek came out yep. with that as an explanation for yep. A flying saucer being yes. seen. Right. And it's just more spin, and it gets more ridiculous as time yes. goes on. It's yes. so obvious.
Yep.
And I guess they just think that they have this thing figured out and won totally. But I don't see it that way, and I know you don't. That their house of cards is falling apart, and they're getting
yes,
very
I
desperate.
Believe so. That's why we're having these shows, Don. So hopefully people who hear them will talk about it to their friends and neighbors, and the more people find out, you get the 100th monkey effect, and sometimes this information can spread very quickly, viral, as they say.
Well, we've got over 500 monkeys in Washington D.C. So,
yeah, that's right.
You got to make sure it's the right kind of the right species, I guess, too.
Yep, yep.
If you look for the monkeys to do.
Yeah, I hope most of the at least half of those monkeys in this fall's election, are looking for another job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Ken, we're out of time. I want to thank you. I want to direct the listening audience to your website once again. It's educate-yourself.com or educate-yourself.com, whichever you prefer. And, or is it .org? Now that I think about it.
No, it's .org, yeah. It's
.org. I just flashed on that for a second. So
good.
It's educate-yourself.org or educate-yourself.org, O-R-G.
Right, true.
And, Ken, I want to thank you. We're going to try to get you on this coming month. Got a lot of great shows lined up, so you and I will be scheduling something here.
Okay,
and,
thank you, Doug.
You know, thanks for all the help you're giving me to get my work out there. That's much appreciated.
Pleasure.
For those of you who have not been reading about what's going on in the political world, visit Ken's site. Also, check out my site, directlightproductions.com, and go to the articles page or the news page to keep up with what's going on. Archives are posted. Spend some time on the site. A lot of people are finding that they can spend both at Ken's site and now my site a little bit. Spend some time there, and there's quite a bit to see and hear. So, Ken, I want to thank you, and we're going to say goodnight to the listening audience. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our guest tonight, Ken Adachi, will be back with us again. We thank him for all the wonderful information he brought forward. And special thanks to Don Newsom, executive producer, and Seth Hendrick on the sound. Somewhere in the wings is Nicholas, our intern. So I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.